Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-author, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing great.
Ready for a full week of shows here, or as many as we can get into a week, starting on Wednesday, which is not our usual thing. But we did say, I believe, on Friday that the holiday would run interference with our podcasting this
week. Yeah,
month,
yeah, so. We kind of warned folks that like everybody else, we want to spend time with the family, that kind of thing on Memorial Day. So. We kind of warn people in advance, but
we laid down a base of excuse, I think.
That. Yeah, exactly. So we can, and we still have a chance, perhaps, of getting in three shows this week. We'll see,
folks. If you get lucky, okay, we're not promising anything, but
yeah, you're
welcome.
If
you get lucky, yeah, that's right. You're welcome that we're even considering it. But we're gonna get as many in as we can, and we got a lot to talk about because we're gonna do 1 to 3 shows on the subject of MIT Reviews 10 Breakthrough Technologies for 2017. And we're going to start with 4 of those tonight, and in subsequent shows, whenever they may be, we're going to take a look at these and talk about not only what each of them is, each of the 10 Breakthrough Technologies. This is the thing MIT Review does every year, and we always go through this list.
Every year they do.
Yeah. So these are the 10 big ones for this year. I thought what we'd do is it'd be kind of fun to talk about which of these we think will impact the largest number of people, which will have the longest lasting impact, which one is the most exciting, and which one's the scariest of them. So we'll go through them all first, and then we'll come back and we'll answer those questions about them. So with seeing as each one of these topics could be an hour-long show in its own right, we'll just have to jump right in and look at this first one here, which is scientists are making remarkable progress at using brain implants to restore the freedom of movement that spinal cord injuries take away. Obviously, this is one we've talked about quite a bit. Come back to this every time there's been a headline about it, and it's amazing to see how fast the progress is occurring with this, isn't it?
Yeah, and you would think, in some ways, it's one of those things like fusion power that's always right on the cusp of having. Cochlear implants, believe it or not, in their earliest forms have been around since the 70s, and that involves a direct brain interface, right? And you would think, well, if we can do a direct brain interface for hearing, why can't we do it for vision, and that's still coming. It's still being worked on. And why can't we do it to help people that are paralyzed? Well, it's proven to be a tough nut to crack. Meanwhile, people that are deaf and using cochlear implants are living very, close to normal lives due to that technology. And unfortunately, paralyzed people are not. But hey, we're beginning to see some promise that some of this tech will begin to get outside the laboratories.
The thing is, one of the things they talk about in the story is that the first computer brain interfaces were actually in the late 90s. That they were actually hooking people up to things, and people were able to move a cursor on a screen and a few basic things like that, just using their brains, and it looked like, this is it. We can communicate, right? Brain computer interface. Goodbye paralysis, right? Goodbye all these problems. And yes, it's proved a much slower slog to get to where we are now than they had hoped. But what they're seeing now is real results, actual, the lame walk kind of headlines coming out of some of these stories. So it's really amazing to see that corner finally being turned. It kind of gives you hope for fusion, doesn't it? When you see something like this happening, it's like, well, hey, you know what? If something can be around for a long time and not deliver on its promise, and then suddenly start delivering on its promise, that's extremely good news. And of course, the driver here.
It'll end
just,
up being one of those overnight successes that took 30 years, right?
Yeah, right.
It's you know, something's been worked on and worked on and worked on, and by and large, people have just sort of written it off. The public has, until bang, you know, here it arrives all at once. It may be something like that, the way it hits us. But anyway, it's exciting for those who have a problem like this with paralysis or something. So in answer to your question, does this impact a lot of people? Well, not initially. Fortunately, there are, you know, the population of people with paralysis is not huge. It's significant, but not huge. And so initially it doesn't impact everybody, but ultimately I think we all end up with computer brain interfaces of one sort or another.
I think so too.
Yeah,
it won't have to be this variation, right? It won't have to be to reverse paralysis, but we'll all end up with those. The availability timescale given by MIT Technology Review for this one is 10 to 15 years. So that would put it right in there, Stephen, in the overnight success that took like 30 to 35 years to get here. So I think you're probably tracking that one very well. Okay, let's look. What's the next item on the list? And I'm actually asking because I've lost my
tractor trailers without a human at the wheel.
Okay, there you go. Self-driving,
you know, self-driving cars, but better, right? Self-driving 18 wheelers.
Turns out that's a much harder problem to solve. I mean, not surprisingly. Because you've got this large load that you're moving around, this much larger vehicle, and the dynamics just of weight shifting around in a truck and of just not turning a truck over.
You can't stop those things on a dime. I mean,
stopping it in time. A lot of that kind of stuff. It's a lot easier to do those things with a car.
Yeah.
Which is why, it's a fairly good paying job being a truck driver. Let's face it. I mean,
that's right.
Most of us can drive a car. Only a few of us are really cut out to drive a truck. But now what we're seeing is systems for automating truck driving are coming online, and a little bit of self-driving truck driving is going on. They even reference an instance where a self-driving truck carried 2,000 cases of Bud right here in my neighborhood, down Interstate 25 from Fort Collins to Colorado Springs. So that's pretty impressive because it's right through Denver. You go right through Denver to do that. So
is impressive is that it wasn't Coors. But anyway, that's
somebody paid a lot of money for that to be Bud. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
that might not have been as good a highway run because you'd be on I-70 and I don't know. They just didn't have the good destinations to do it with.
If they came through Denver, as I recall, that is a lot of stop and go traffic. It's some technically sophisticated driving there.
You would think. I mean, they might have timed it, probably did time it very carefully, but there is no time you can be sure that you're going to drive down 25 south through Denver and not run into something, right? Not have some kind of slowdown or something going on. So, to that extent, it was pretty sophisticated. However, they actually drove it out to the highway, and once it reached Colorado Springs and they got off I-25, they drove it to the – it was pure highway driving.
If that's all that they're able to do is pure highway driving, that's still huge because, that's 95% of what you're doing with an 18-wheeler, right?
Right, exactly.
I would say this is one of the scarier ones, Phil. I mean, obviously, you got to have systems.
Yeah, hey, Stephen, we're going to answer the four questions at the end, like I said. You jump into the end, man. You're going to ruin the surprise, okay, if you keep answering.
Yeah, because I did not realize we were saving it. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's okay. No, it's
all right.
We can talk about it anytime you want. You just. I promised it would be at the end. That's all. And the kids are all like, well, why is Mr. Gordon answering them now? I don't understand. Anyway, I'm kidding.
Take notes. There's going to be a test at the end.
But I think it does go to show you that this is one with a time window attached to it as well. We're not going to see it next year. You know, I have to go back to the story here, and because I didn't bring those over to my notes, that's why I keep switching back and forth. But according to MIT Review, this is 5 to 10 years before we'll actually see this out there. And some of the company they talk about in the article, Otto, is not even really interested in having fully automated truck driving. They're just interested in having a system where a guy can take a break, maybe even take a nap, but there's always a guy there. There's, you know, or excuse me, a truck driver. There's always somebody in the cab. And the idea of just a, you know, a truck that's just a robot isn't even on the radar. I think it is on the radar for others, but interesting that kind of this leading technology company there, they're not even thinking in those terms.
Yeah, right now, it's pretty premature, I would think, to just say we're going totally automated.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, as far as the time frame, I think they're right on 5 to 10 years. I would be surprised if we're seeing a lot of it in 5 years. I think they're going to take their time to get it right because these things are monsters. They, you know, when you get involved in an accident with an 18-wheeler, I can tell you from my day job that it's hardly ever a minor thing. We're talking maiming and deaths and everything else. Yeah, when a private vehicle gets involved, I'm tangled up with one of these things. So I just think they're going to take their time. I think we'll see automated cars a lot sooner than we see these things.
It's 4,000 deaths a year, 100,000 injuries a year in truck and bus crashes. So throw the bus in there, and you know that kind of murkies it up a little bit. But it's still that's a lot of people hurt. My own brother-in-law was in a terrible accident with one of these years ago, and it was years and years of physical therapy and rehab.
It's not a good thing. I mean, when you tangle with one of these things. So will they take their time? Yeah, I think they will. But will they ultimately do it? Yeah, because there's such a
because 4,000 people killed every year. That's right. I mean,
if you can get these things where they're driving better than people, that's one thing. But also, you pay these drivers so much, and perhaps you can save some money if it's both safer and you're saving money as a company to have these systems in place. Then you're going to do it, and
pretty hard not to do that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, particularly when your competition is doing it.
So, yeah, everybody's going to follow that one. Okay, how about this one? Paying with your face. Face detecting systems in China now authorize payments, provide access to facilities, and track down criminals. Will other countries follow? I think that's a really good question. Will other countries follow? There seems to be a comfort level with this kind of technology in China that we don't have in the West.
I would say throughout Asia, there's probably a comfort level that we don't have in the West.
Yeah,
I would guess that Japan wouldn't have much trouble with this. It's just different culture, but we in the West, are just going to say, you know what, I'm not interested in, let me pull out my plastic instead. I can do that just as well. There may be. Ultimately, this idea that paying with the face is less likely to you can't it be more difficult to steal. If it's a safer system for the banks, then they may give people a discount for using these things. You know, you're giving up a little privacy, but hey, you're gonna get a little discount every time because. We know that the right person is using this system and not someone who's stolen a credit card or whatever. And
got face recognition security on my laptop that I bought back in January. And as far as I know, that's the only way to get into that laptop. So I really need to fix that because no one else can ever use that laptop. If I'm, if I die or am disfigured. Right, there's no way into my laptop, right? Because it won't regulate. You know, lose a lot of weight, and suddenly it's like, nope, I don't see him. But
the skinny guy is not.
Yeah, but my observation on it is, it's no faster. I can type a fast word much quicker than it takes for this thing to recognize me. Because it's like I'm looking, making sure it's you. You know, it's like, well, I could have typed a password by then. So until the convenience is actually there, no big advantage. Is the convenience there in having your face scanned versus reaching into your pocket to pull out a piece of plastic? Actually, yeah. I mean, that is easier, but it's scary easy, right? It's it's like, well, too easy. You know, you don't want your money to be that easily available. And of course, the whole problem with scanning a credit card, getting a credit card number, you know, these devices they put on ATMs to steal your information. Well, your face is just out there in public all the time anyway, right? So raises all kinds of red flags, I'm thinking, for people who, I don't know, as you said, culturally just aren't as eager to get used to this idea. I think cultural issues more than anything else will be the slowdown in the West for
I found it interesting. They're talking about the company that's working on this in China is Face Plus Plus, mm-hmm. which is face with two, followed by two pluses is how you would spell that. And you know, the person who's writing the story says, yeah, when you know they had my face before loaded up into their system so that I could walk through and, you know, and it would allow me into certain parts of the building. And you know, when I'd walk through the building, it would follow both my face straight on as well as my profile. And, you know, and there were some parts of the building I still didn't have access to. They could tailor the level of access to every guest, visitor, you know, visitor or person
right.
working there.
Right.
And that's pretty interesting. I think that's an interesting a technology that I think a lot of companies, particularly tech companies, that want to hire, you know, hide their R&D perhaps or
right.
whatever, that are any company that's interested in avoiding industrial espionage would be interested in something like that. And so I thought it was interesting though. What they say, the availability is now. With Facebook?
Yeah, it's available now, so you can have it. Yeah. If you want to achieve those kinds of benefits you were just describing, any organization that wants to do that can. I think the realistic implementation of it in the U.S. is a few years out, for sure. It'll be interesting to see this come online. People will get used to it fast, though. That's
right.
The thing. These things that seem very strange and intimidating suddenly become yesterday's news. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm just giving my own
laptop experience, which is that it's not great.
Well, you can forget your lanyard, you know, if you work at a company that requires that. You can't forget your face, you know. So, you know.
That's true. Yeah, you can get into the – that actually would be pretty handy, walking around an office and you can go to the bathroom and you got it from your desk and you didn't bring your ID with you. You know, that sort of thing is very irritating. But as long as you brought your face, you know, you're
good. You're okay. Solid. So that's I think in certain places it will be adopted quickly. That's my guess. So.
Yeah, I think so. As ID, not necessarily as payment. That's the creepy part. I mean, that's the part that gives people pause, but just as a form of identification, why not? You know, it kind of works that way anyhow. All right, how about this? Practical quantum computers. We've talked about this. We've done a couple shows about this now. Advances at Google, Intel, and several research groups indicate that computers with previously unimaginable power are finally within reach. And this is very interesting. They talk about Google getting out there with the 49-qubit system. We talked about this when we did the show. 50 qubits is where some experts say if you can achieve that, you can achieve the greatest computer that's ever existed, right? There's no way a silicon standard computer will ever touch a 50-qubit quantum computer. You're there. You've arrived. And
so
elsewhere
somewhere
it says
between,
the article.
They say somewhere that's between 30 and 100 qubits.
Some say
some
50.
Place in there.
Others say somewhere between 30 and 100. Exactly. So that's the sweet spot. You know, for quantum computing. Actually, that's a sweet spot for starting quantum computing, for getting into the world of it. What they talk about a little further on really kind of gets your attention when they say we'll have these, you know, 100-qubit machines maybe as soon as 2 to 5 years from now. Eventually expect 100,000-qubit systems. Which will disrupt the materials, chemistry, and drug industries by making accurate molecular scale models possible for the discovery of new materials and drugs. You think about the advances that we're seeing in artificial intelligence, machine learning, that kind of stuff, with the very good computers that we have today, if a between 30 and 100 qubit computer, quantum computer, is more powerful than any conventional computer ever built, what kind of AI are we going to be able to run on 100,000 qubit systems, right? I mean, what?
And I don't think it's the power is linear. I think it may be exponential.
Yeah, okay, so
as you're, as
it's even harder to get your head around, right? I mean, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's just not even, you know, who knows? But here's it's interesting. It talks about these labs. They're having to put these machines at near absolute zero, and you know, and seismic problems. Even the slightest rumble could just tear one of these things up. You know, I'm wondering, Phil, if the ideal spot for a quantum computer, that you know, one something big, you know, like a 100,000 qubit quantum computer, what if something like that was in geostationary orbit, where you're it's very cold, and there's no problem with you know any kind of seismic problems at all,
right?
You know, and just you know, and it just communicates like a telecommunication device, you know, satellite. It could either be
I think that's a very sensible idea.
Yeah.
You can imagine also at the bottom of the ocean, right? Maybe buried in the ice in Antarctica, places like that, right? But
yeah.
Orbit sounds like a sensible place too. The only problem with all of those is then it's kind of far away. But, you know, we can communicate at light speed, so it shouldn't be that big of an issue. I would guess. Geostationary orbit, that's up there though. That's what is that?
It's a ways away, but it's yeah, but still, I mean, you're still getting an answer back to a problem that was previously unsolvable for the entire
yeah.
lifetime of the universe.
And you're getting it back, in half a second, right? I mean, it's not like
And Phil's sitting there going, this is BS.
Yeah, man, half a second. Oh, I knew there'd be a catch. I knew it. Yeah. Quantum computer. Yeah, that'll be me. Having to wait half a second. For, you know, unlimited power. Yeah, it's true. I'm intrigued to see how fast anything really happens with this. We were talking about fusion, and quantum computing is another fusion-like technology, isn't it, in that sense?
Yeah.
We've been hearing about it for a while.
We've been looking for forever, and you know, there's even – IBM's even marketing something that they're calling a quantum computer, and we're kind of entering this point at which we feel confident that it's going to happen. It's just, you know, is it going to be, you know, when does it really get real? You know,
right.
When does it become something that is obviously performing at levels that classical computers just can't duplicate? And
right.
I think we can confidently say that that hasn't happened yet.
No.
But when would it happen? I don't know, Phil.
They say 4 to 5 years. MIT Tech Review says 4 to 5 years. So
I think that's right in the ballpark
yeah.
based on everything I'm reading. These guys really feel that they're on the cusp. And so, hey, yeah, 4 to 5 years.
4 to 5, not 45.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 4 to 5 years, yes.
Like the ad with the frog detection, right? You don't want to be saying too many things. All right. Well, there you go. Okay, so we got those four breakthroughs. We'll talk about some more next time. But for these, now, let's get into this. What do you think? Of these four, which will impact the largest number of people, would you say?
Well, quantum computers will impact everybody on Earth.
Yeah, long term.
When they're real and they're solving problems that could not be solved any other way, every person on Earth will be impacted, for better or for worse. And for most, I would say, by far the most would be for the better. So that's long.
I think maybe in the nearer term, paying with your face, huh? Might be
maybe so.
Might have the brighter
and not just paying with your face, just using your face as your ID.
Yeah.
For anything that you need to use your ID for, whether it be payment or anything else. And you know, It would be interesting if you were, you know, able to do this for, you know, toll roads. Imagine if something was fast enough to get your face as you're driving down a toll road. Things, you know,
yep.
It's anything. Anything it needs your ID for.
Well, they can get license plates now. It shouldn't be too long before they get faces, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, they got those cameras taking your picture when you speed, right? It's just a matter of if they can recognize it in a moving vehicle. That'll be the trick. Okay, so which will have the longest lasting impact? I think we've got a front runner here already with quantum computers, right?
Yeah.
Impacting the largest number of people and probably short-term. Well, you can't talk short-term about long-term impact. That's crazy. So, yeah, quantum computers just—they win that category. That's a technology.
Self-driving vehicles. Basically, you know, the same technology that delivers the self-driving truck. I mean, ultimately delivers tech that allows automation of lots of different jobs. Okay, and so and we as a society are going to have to change to accommodate the fact that, you know, so many jobs are going to be automated in the fairly near future. I think we're going to, you know, it will be the sort of thing that we've got the truck driver still in the cab, but we no longer have anybody in the back in the sleeper.
Right.
You know, the guy can get rest as he goes down the road. Because it's, you know, 99% automated. He's just sort of a system monitor. And
to scariest, and I think you're right, right? Self-driving trucks is potentially scary on a lot of different fronts. It's scary economically. It's scary, oh, no, it's a truck with no driver. You know, I mean, it's just got that same scary – people are scared of self-driving cars, but only more so. And I think the other one that's scary is the paying with your face. This time, the paying part, right? But definitely just the whole idea of you're never in – you know, you're never anonymous anymore, right? The idea that the cameras are looking at your face and they know who you are all the time. That idea is pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But, I mean, you know, you're a marketer, Phil. Imagine how you could market this to be not the opposite of scary, to be comforting that someone is not stealing your money because they can't, you know, you've got your ID with you, and the only ID that you have anymore, you carry with you as part of you.
As long as you can't be spoofed or faked, you're safe. You're secure. Absolutely. You can make it, and the marketing pitch would be that we're returning to a friendlier world. We're returning to an older time because that's how it used to work. Somebody recognized you, and they knew you, and you could trust them. And there was a trust-based world based on the fact that people recognized each other. That's how I would market that. Okay,
right.
Most exciting of our...
Every, you know, New York City just became a small town. You know,
yeah,
brought to you
that,
by Facebook.
Exactly. The whole world just became a small town. That's right.
That's right.
Okay, so therefore it's the most exciting. Once you get me marketing something, Stephen, I can't stop myself. It's it's the most exciting of all the technologies. But actually, I got to say that the using brain implants to restore freedom of movement to spinal cord injuries, that's reversing paralysis is by far and away the most encouraging of all of these, just because of the impact it has on the lives that of those who benefit from it. I think you'll agree, or no, Stephen?
Oh, yeah.
Jumping
I
out there on another.
Phil, do you recall back in the 70s, there was this rather poor Iron Man adaptation for television?
No, I never saw it.
Okay, it's real poor. But the thing that made it interesting was that the Tony Stark character, and I forget if it was even Tony Stark in this adaptation, but... he was paralyzed,
right?
And so not only was the suit, making him stronger, like in the comic books, but it was allowing him to walk.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so you know, I would say that the very I'm saying the very technology that will allow the paralyzed to walk will also allow us to, you know, have load lifters like an Alien, right?
So, oh, right.
And machines that would allow us to run much faster than we can run and lift loads much heavier than we can normally lift and just do things physically, that we normally abled people wouldn't be able to do. We can turn ourselves into, to the extent
Iron Man, basically, is what you're saying. Yeah,
into super people.
I think that's true. There's a huge upside to these brain machine interfaces that does not get explored in that story at all, because what they're talking about is wonderful enough. But come to mention it, we all get to be super beings too. So that ain't bad either.
No, it's not. So
all right. Well, you know what? Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, initially that sort of technology only impacts a few people, but ultimately, brain interface impacts us all eventually.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so it's may impact the largest number of people. You've gone back to the first question with that answer. Stephen, you have just been all over the map on these questions, okay?
You're gonna have to rein me in.
We're going to have a talk at our next rehearsal, okay? That's all I can say. No, hey, how fun has this been? This is great. I'm glad we've started this list. And, folks, we're going to be back later this week with more of the list. That's all I can be absolutely sure of. But we will finish the whole list at some point. So please join us again next time. And until next time, live to see it.